right? I was going to say, for those on a low budget, there's a toll-free number, and Eric looked at me, he thought I was going to say, for those on a low budget, though, you can have Eric come to your church. That's what he just said to me. Well, that. And Dan practically comes for free, don't you? He'll pay you, just let him preach. One, it's easy to remember, 877-804-LIFE. Just remember, you're going to call for life. 877-804-LIFE, and you can leave a message if you don't catch Jennifer or the office. Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm going to share from... It probably won't last for sharing. I'm going to start sharing, but it probably won't last. I'm going to, from Acts chapter 14, if you want to turn there, and I'm going to have Kathy read for us several passages of Scripture and talk to you a little bit. And all week long, we've tried to bring you to a point maybe of crisis, a good kind of crisis, a checkpoint in your life. And I think that so many of us have missed the checkpoints along the way and took maybe the bed of ease. And then it comes to a crisis, or it comes to where we're reaping what we've sown. And then now we have to come to a bigger crisis because we took the bed of ease for so long. And God's helping us correct that and be courageous and bold. And so I'm going to talk about boldness today, because this is a passage about boldness, and there's several scriptures. I thought it'd be nice if you'd read for us, Kathy, because there's just, I'm going to pick, if we had time, I'd read the whole chapter, but we'll just pick some sections out of it, and then I'll talk.
Shall I tell them where it is? Yes. Okay, Acts chapter 14, verse 1 through 5. I was trying to speak. I'm having trouble speaking.
Well, I picked the wrong one to help me.
I was thinking it, but it was, my lips weren't moving.
I know your lips weren't moving.
I thought they were. Okay, this is the reading of the word. Quit grinning. At Iconium, Paul and Barnabas went as usual into the Jewish synagogue. There, they spoke so effectively that a great number of Jews and Gentiles believed. But the Jews who refused to believe stirred up the Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brothers. So Paul and Barnabas spent considerable time there speaking boldly for the Lord, who confirmed the message of his grace by enabling them to do miraculous signs and wonders. The people of the city were divided. Some sided with the Jews, others with the apostles. There was a plot afoot among the Gentiles and Jews, together with their leaders, to mistreat them and stone them. Now jump down to verse 8. In Lystra, there sat a man crippled in his feet, who was lame from birth and had never walked. He listened to Paul as he was speaking. Paul looked directly at him, saw that he had faith to be healed, and called out, "Stand up on your feet!" At that, the man jumped up and began to walk. When the crowd saw that what Paul had done, they shouted in the Lyconian language, "The gods have come down to us in human form." Now jump on down to 19. Then some Jews came from Antioch and Iconium and won the crowd over. They stoned Paul and dragged him outside the city, thinking he was dead. But after the disciples had gathered around him, he got up and went back into the city. The next day, he and Barnabas left for Derbe.
Thanks. We hear a lot of stories around here about revival and outbreaks of revival and what's going on in a lot of different places and the power of God. And we hear a lot of stories about pastors touched by the power of God, or maybe came here or some other place and touched by the power of God. And then that pastor, that person, goes back to their church. with the revival fire, you know, and they're burning and they're on fire. Some of you might be like that. And then they go back with great expectation and the fire of God's in them. And then a few weeks later, you get a story back. I went back with the fire of God and half the people left my church. And when I hear those stories, you know, of course, I don't like to hear those stories at all. And the bad thing about it is it begins to appear as though people left the church because of revival. And we begin to associate a move of God with splits and division. And then it starts putting fear in people because they're leaders, because they feel like that if they get involved with this move of God, whether they're not sure what it is or how it moves, but is it worth the split and is it worth the trouble? And so when I hear those things, it's saddening to me, because when you hear half the church left or a portion of the church left, you need to stop for a minute and ask yourself why. Why did they leave? Why did they leave in the first place? And you may not like this answer, but this is the answer I believe. I believe they left because the pastor had not really been doing his job up to that time. I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that as just a truth. The reason is, if he or she had been speaking boldly all along and being a true shepherd of the sheep, those people would have never lasted that long in the first place. Because when you come back with fire, then it seems like, wow, then boy, it split. No, they would have never been there when the fire showed up if it had been bold all along. You understand the trick of this? And then we get mad at the people, or we blame revival, or we hear about revival, the next pastor backs away thinking, well, revival splits churches. Revival divides people. No, we were divided in the first place. It's just nobody came along to draw a line between us. Revival, all revival does is put a line in the sand. But we were on separate sides anyway. And so what happens is that a pastor or a leader begins to go and do what maybe they should have been doing for years, and maybe we're playing a little bit of catch up, you know, getting caught up on things, which is good. And then the trouble erupts because it's trouble that's been just on the stove. It just never was brought to a boil because you never turned up the heat. But it's been on the stove all along. And so in my opinion, you have to go through that, or else you have to just live compromised and become a politician rather than a pastor and rather than a leader. And you have no choice, because you'll have to be turning up and down the heat according to the mood of the people rather than trying to please God. And here, you heard it this weekend, as they say, even before revival, that there were seasons, which I don't know for myself, this is what they tell me, and I believe them, that there were seasons when we had 100% tithers in this church. And some people might think, well, what'd you have, 15 or 20 people? But at that time when we had it, for a town this size, we had what would be considered a successful church. As one person said, that room over there that you were in was filled, and we were setting up chairs. It's not a great big room, but for a town of this size, it was doing well, and it was probably the largest, had the largest attendance even at that time of most churches around here of that style. And we had 100% tithers. And a lot of people asked me, and I did things on it, and I just received yesterday or the day before a magazine from Mexico, and it's called The Faith Report. And I don't know what it says because it's all in Spanish, but I opened it up and had my picture in it anyway, so whatever they're saying, I don't know. But in their faith reports, they always want to know what I've been doing around here. They want to know, how do you get 100% tithers? And probably Randy came up with the best answer. It's not one that I preach at the places I go, but it was probably, there's some, I didn't like the answer, but there may be some truth to this answer. And Randy one day walked up to me and he says, I can tell you why we had 100% tithers. I said, why is that? He says, because you ran off everybody that doesn't tithe. Or something to that effect. Everybody that doesn't tithe left. Oh, you were much nicer than that. He said, everyone that wouldn't tithe wouldn't stay. Okay, that was much nicer. But I gave my interpretation to it was, I guess I've run everybody off. But really, that's not true. I didn't run anybody off. I never preached tithing. We had 100% tithers, and I can't even remember a one. If I did a sermon on tithing, I don't remember it. Do you remember? Not really. Money was never preached, and begging for money, none of that stuff. What was preached, though, is just let's do everything together. Everything together. I mean, if we're going to sing together, can't we give together? I mean, it's ridiculous to have everybody singing the song, but when the offering comes, only some people give. I mean, if we're all going to sing the song, why don't we all give? And why don't we all love? You know, why don't we all care? You know, just, I don't know. It just always made sense to me that that was God's intention all along. And so I began to plant that. And so, you know, when the music started, everybody was singing. And when the offering came, everybody was giving. And when mostly it was early days, it was Dave, Elder Dave would talk a lot about it. Tithing and some of the other people here, and so they'd get up and they'd say, you know, we've been singing, we all ought to be loving, and we all ought to be giving, and we all ought to be tithers. And it just, you do that along, you have enough people in your church get up and say that long enough, the church catches wind of it and decides to do that. I want to reference to the book of Jude. And I've done this before in other places, and I just want to do it right now. Listen to this. I got to find it, because I didn't know. So I'll find it. Verse 19. These are the men who divide you. So revival doesn't divide. Men do. Or in some cases, women. These are the men who divide you, who follow mere natural instincts and do not have the Spirit. Revival doesn't divide. It's that we have people that are following natural instincts and do not have the Spirit or not being led by the Spirit that have come into our groups over the years. And most of us as leaders, I'm still speaking like a lot of leaders are here, I think they are. The leadership has gone for the growth rather than the health. And we were just glad to get people. And of course, pastors have been, leaders have been guilty of this for years, is one person will go to a church and devastate or hurt people or spread rumors or whatever and cause trouble, just stir up trouble, and then all of a sudden, so then they leave, the church is still in the hurt of that, but then they go to another church, and rather than the leadership there, the pastor going, whoa, what is this? You don't need to be here until you straighten out that mess there. They say, oh, we want numbers, come in, why don't you teach a Sunday school class? And, you know, I've even had that happen to me. I've had people leave and go someplace else, and 2 weeks later, they're teaching Sunday school. And we still got people here, brokenhearted and hurt by the things that happened, and now you just went and put a medal on them and said, we're going to say you're okay. But you know what? It doesn't take very long. Then the same thing happens there. Because it's not a case where a move of God divides. A move of God to spiritual people always unifies. Always. Always, 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 always will unify the true people of God. God does not divide His own people. All it does is reveal who is who and what's what. And are we going to go God's way? And how long can you do this? I mean, it's like this church. How long can you blow this balloon up before it pops? You know, you eventually have to make some decisions. Who are we going to serve? And you can't have this, as we talked about, the two tables, or you can't have this system we have. So I just wanted to say that, because some of you may be going back, and you're going to take probably are adjusting. Hopefully, you're adjusting your ministry. just like I've had to do many times over the years, and still am ready to do at any instant. I just want you to know that. I am ready to adjust anything in these services at an instant. And in fact, these people know that if I feel in a split second that God wants something changed, that immediately I'll gather them up and say, we got to do something different. That God's doing something different, and we got to adjust our attitudes. And so, I mean, some of you are doing that, and you may get some trouble out of it, or some criticism, or I hope nobody leaves you. I hope they love you enough, and I hope they trust you enough not to leave you. But if it happens, please don't let the reputation of the Spirit of God and what He's doing in the world take the rap. Let the people who left take the rap. You know, okay, because it's people of natural instincts and those who don't have the Spirit of God who divide us. Those who have the Spirit of God are not divided. God unifies His people. It's the same Spirit with the same mind, and He speaks one voice. So try to keep that in mind as you go forth. And if you get knocked around a little bit, don't blame yourself. Probably, if you're going to blame yourself, don't blame yourself for what you're about to do. Blame yourself for all the stuff you've already done that made you have to come put your foot down, okay? So I've been there, and you've been there, and we've had pastors here. Late last night, a lot of pastors, I don't know if you know how many, but we had about 500 people here that were associated with ministries this weekend. That's a lot of ministries. And so some of them had to leave. And already last night, the email and the visitor's guest page on our website was starting to get responses and very appreciative things. And some of them, one said, I have a lot to think about. And another, I could tell, is getting ready to go into the pulpit this morning and make some changes. And so I'm saying that because hopefully you're thinking about the same thing. And it may not always be what you want. And so that's why today I'm going to take a few minutes and talk to you that when any time you have a true move of God, or actually we need to set our sights on this, and I mentioned this to you, this title last night, that as we move forward, we got to be ready, because we're either going to have a revival or a riot, but we're not going to have the same old routine. You got to be prepared for a revival or a riot, but not the routine. And I was prepared for that. And you need to be prepared for that. We're going for revival. But I don't know. I can't guarantee revival. I can guarantee if you go with it with all your strength, you'll either get a revival or a riot. You'll get one or the other. You will get a response. And, oh, it's wonderful, because people who never responded to your ministry before, boy, they'll have something to say now. That's where I stand in this. This is kind of my job, I guess, is to spur you on and other leaders and other places in the country to go for revival, and but be ready for a riot, but set your sail that we're not going to stay in the same old religious routine, come what may. We're going to do what's right. And that's why I picked this Acts chapter 14. Isn't it a wonderful passage of Scripture? Because, oh, it's so good. They go down, and there's signs, and there's wonders, and there's healings, and there's beatings. And same. And yeah, they dragged, yeah, then dragged him outside the city, thinking he was dead. And so it's got everything in here. It's got revival and riot right in the same chapter. So you kind of got to be ready, because with a true move of God, here's what happens. The goats start butting and the wolves start chasing. The pigs start wallowing and the dogs start vomiting. The snakes start creeping, but the sheep start praying and God starts moving. Everything happens. Everything happens. And the sheep, among all this animal farm, start praying. And God starts moving. But everybody else starts doing everything too. And it can be kind of frightening when everybody was so nice sitting there doing nothing for all these years. You know, and now all of a sudden their character is coming out because God's on the move. And you can't blame God for that. It's just, it's a shame that if we've had any unity over the years, that we've been unified in our lukewarmness. And then when God springs on us, we all of a sudden find out that the building we call church and the people we call church and the place we call church doesn't want God. It just wants this mixture. And you're here because you want a true move of God in your own heart first. As I've said all week, it's got to start with you. But we want to see, I'll tell you what I want to see. I just want to see God get his rightful place before it's all over with. Really, just bottom line with you. I love revival. I preach revival. I love to see people touched by God. We're going to hear about some people, I think, in a little bit, some more people that were touched by God. And I love all that. But the bottom line for me is I want to spend my life just restoring honor to him and his rightful place in the world. And that's what I want to do. That's my job before him. So I was putting this together, revival or riot. And I think a true revival always runs the risk of a riot. There's no guarantees that if any outbreak happens at all, that everybody's going to follow and be good boys and girls. It always runs the risk of having a riot. But if there were no risks of having a riot, there'd be no reason to have a revival. See, it's the risks that reveal we need a move of God. It's because it's risky that it reveals we need a move of God. Because would you agree, it shouldn't be risky to have the Spirit of the Lord move in his own house. Shouldn't be. Should be a piece of cake. But the fact that we feel we want to move a God, but we feel our jobs are under pressure. Our jobs are at risk. Our reputations are at risk. Our friendships. Isn't that terrible? Here we've been sitting in church with people all these years, and we've had friendships with people, and we all of a sudden feel like my friendship with these people are at risk if we have a move of God. That's awful. What have we been doing, you know? And so the very fact that risk is involved increases the light that we need. We need a move of God. There shouldn't be any risk of division in God's house because he wants to come and do something wonderful and increase his power. But we all know that there is. So Paul and Barnabas, back to the story. Paul and Barnabas, it says they spoke boldly. I just, why didn't they have tape recorders back then? Just to capture them. What does that mean? God says they spoke boldly, and I think I know what that means, but I'm not sure, because I've grown up with so many sermons over the years in my lifetime where there was no boldness that I'm not sure what boldness sounds like. But I would have liked to have heard it. And they spoke the word of God so bold. Now listen to this. God, that's what she was praying. You didn't even know I was going to preach on this. But God backed up what they said. I heard you pray that today. God confirmed the word with miracles, signs, and wonders. But actually, that's true, but that's really not true. Let me rephrase that. That is true. But I've heard a lot of people preach the word, and God never backed up what they said. So maybe we should say it this way. God backed up their boldness in preaching the word. He was really confirming not just his word, because a lot of people could go and say it, but nothing would happen. But they had some quality called boldness, whatever that was added to the word. And this has been quite a thing for many of us who have been word people for so long. who began to just say, I heard this all along. Just preach the word. Just preach the word. Just preach the word. Do you remember the days they said, I heard this, young pastors were told this for years, Dan. They said, just preach the word and people will come, what do they say, knocking your door down to get in. And then 15 years later, they're just discouraged and say, I've been preaching the word, preaching the word. There's something that needs to be added that comes from our heart, that comes from our decision that we must have a move of God, whether it causes revival or riot. I'm not going to play this game of soothing, patting on the back and playing the game. And as a matter of fact, I heard for so long, just preach the word. And then listen to what they're preaching. There's certain scriptures they won't preach. They say, just preach the word, but they never talk about carrying the cross or dying to self. Just preach the word. And then there we are off talking about what God will give us and what we can get. And I've done it, and I still believe that. I want to make it known. I still believe He's a giving God. I've never changed my mind on prosperity. I can preach better when my stomach's not growling. I can. Being better fed in the natural helps. So I believe in prosperity, but I realize so many times we say we're preaching the word. I don't know how to tell you this. Like, I asked about a doctor the other day, and I said, and the doctor looks like he's got a heart for the particular field he's in, and I said, why do you think that doctor went into that field? And they answered back, they said, for one reason. I said, what's that? The money. There's more money in that field than the other one. And that's kind of hard to break to us people, you know, that's the thinking out there. And so much in ministry is playing upon this. And so we say, just preach the word, just preach the word, just preach the word. But we absolutely know what we're doing. We know what we're doing. We're preaching the word that's going to bring us what we want. We're preaching the word that's going to increase offerings, hopefully. We're not preaching words that increase Jesus. We know exactly what we were up to for years and years and years. And so God's dealing with us on that. So anyway, they preach this and they go and they preach with boldness, and God confirms the word with miracles, signs, and wonders. And I was thinking about that. If we want a confirmation from God, we're going to have to start speaking boldly. And I thought maybe if we would begin to speak as bold as they did, we could get what they got and do what they did. There's nothing wrong with the Word, and there's nothing wrong with the Bible. I think we're falling a little bit short in our ability to understand the cost of true boldness. True boldness, by the way, is not raising your voice. True boldness, I found, true boldness is speaking to the people that are actually there. It doesn't take boldness to talk about crime in our streets, unless you're standing on a street full of crime. And so many times from the pulpits of America, what we call boldness is really sidestepping the issues and talking about everything that's wrong out there, and we don't talk about what's wrong in here. If we're bold, we'll talk about what's wrong in here. And that's what I do. I talk about, I mean, it just seems logical. If we're going to preach, let's preach to the people that are here. We can do something with their lives. And I think we have found an amazing thing has happened. That the stronger and bolder I preach in this place, the more God increases with signs, wonders, and miracles. And it's scary sermons, scary moments. I've said things in the last month, but more boldly than I've ever said in my life. And the amazing thing is I go out of town and I'll try my wings out in certain cities I've never been in before. And I'll speak really, really bold, just thinking, well, this isn't such a hot city, so if they don't ask me back, what's the loss, you know? I don't know. No, I don't ever think, but I've never been there before. And I'll go in, and I mean, I'll just try it out. You know, it's like I'm just going to open both barrels, blow their heads off, and see what happens. Speaking things they've never heard before, really boldness, and then to the shock of my life, when I give the altar call, the altar call lasts like 5 seconds, and everybody in the place rushes up to the front. And I go, this is amazing. I was in one city where there were, a little over 1,000 people. About 1,000 people were there every night. And then I thought, well, let's go for it. I'd pound away, and I'd speak bold, and then what's going to happen? And I'd say, everybody that wants to come down for prayer and get a touch from God, and I'm telling you, there must have not been but 30 people that stayed up there staring, and almost 1,000 people rushed to say, pray for me now. And like here, they did exactly the way they do it. They packed in so tight, you just had to go down and start praying, and just waves of glory went through there, and they come running down. And I don't think it was my eloquent ability to put sermons together. I think it was just flat boldness that spoke right to the problem, right to who we are, and confronted what's going on in our lives, and then gave the solution. Run to Him, like we sang. Run to Him, and they do. And it's amazing to me. Let me tell you. I don't think I'm rambling, am I? I don't think so. I'm kind of just relaxed and enjoying myself. But Kathy got up this morning and she said to me. Isn't this amazing that how many pastors actually like us? She said, I can't hardly believe it. Pastors all over this United States actually like us and are running to us and listening to us. And that's new for us. That's new. I always wanted to speak boldly, but I didn't ever have an audience, you know, that wanted to hear it. But something, I'm telling you, something has changed. Something has changed. It's not, I really don't think that I have changed, but I really think that we have all changed to the point where we're not wanting what we used to want. And I'm saying that because chances are, if you'll go for this, you're going to find there's a large group of people that are in your church, but there are a large group of people that have never come to your church that are looking for the kind of place you're going to help God create. So whether you get a revival or a riot, you have to pass through this. But there are lots of people out there that when that truth and that... Look at this place. Look what's happened here. We told you thousands of people come here. Over 100,000 people have come into this town and never used to come here before. And what is it? Well, they do come for a touch from God. But many, many people come because they want to be confronted with the bold preaching of the word. And so just keep that in mind. You may have to pay a price for a little while, and it's a little scary, you know. But realize the people you've got, if they're divided, are going to keep being divided and have you worried every Saturday night and Sunday night. Are they going to be there tomorrow? And after that sermon, are they going to show up next week? But there's people out there that are different. They're of a different spirit, and they're waiting. They're waiting for a real move of God. They're waiting. They're waiting for the truth. They're waiting and waiting because they're hungry, and they're waiting for signs and wonders and miracles, and they're waiting for the boldness, and they're waiting and waiting. It's just don't be afraid because it hasn't all happened yet. A new day is coming, and just the amazing changes in our hearts. Look at your heart. How much it has changed in the last few years. The hunger level. The desire level. The type of things you go to. Before you'd go to, you know, we a few years ago, you know, we were at the downtown convention center staying at the 5-star hotels. And and we went and we enjoyed ourselves and we had our little booklets and our little notepads as we went in and listened to the same people year after year say the same thing year after year, but we didn't care because we liked the 5-star hotels and the restaurant. We liked the little eloquence that we didn't have in our own church. We liked the little uptownness, you know, and so it was fun getting together with everybody, and they'd have a few famous people wandering around, you know, that you could look at while they drank their coffee and see how they eat. And, right? And we kind of liked that for a while, but, you know, we're not satisfied with that anymore because we just want the real thing now. And we're changing. We've changed. And just think, a few years ago, you might have been insulted to come to a place like this. You were too good for a building like this, and you know it. But you know, things don't matter anymore. Of course, I'm joking with you in some ways, but I think you understand what I'm saying. We're changing. We're changing. And if we're changing, don't you understand everybody's changing? All over the world, the mood is changing in favor of what we've got to say. And the struggles that you had before, they're not going to be the same anymore. I'm not saying you're not going to have struggles, but they're not going to be the same. You're not going to, and isn't this wonderful? You're not going to be struggling so much with people who never respond. Now you're going to have to figure out what to do with all these people that are responding favorably, crying out, falling on their faces before God, saying, "Help me, help me, help me." Well, they're going to look to you for help. You got to help them. And you also have to adjust your ministry to those that are responding and say, "We don't like you, we don't like you, we don't like you, Beelzebub." And what are you going to do? You're going to have to do what he did and what they did. They said, well, they called the master the devil. They'll call you the devil too and live with it. It's going to be a different game and a different scorecard because everything's changing. How long have I talked very long or what? I don't know. I don't want to go too long. The heat's getting up out there. It's going to be another hot day. Should I get you out before you lose any more weight? Some churches have Sunday school. We have sauna school. Come, receive from the Lord and lose weight at the same time. It's confrontational preaching, sweating to the hits. Okay, so I was reading the other day, trying to figure out this story I was reading about Balaam and why God is impressing upon me about this guy named Balaam, because this is a very confusing story at first, because here's Balaam, and they call Balaam up. Now, if you want to understand the story of Balaam, which is hard to understand a little bit, because I'll explain it to you, but anyway, if you want to understand it, you have to understand what Balaam was, okay? He was for hire. He's a man for sale. He speaks for sale. His words are for sale. And he was apparently good enough at what he did that he was worth hiring. He was worth hiring. He could sway and things happen, and he could sway movements, and he could sway God, and he could sway men with his words. And so he was worth hiring. So he was a man for hire for his words. And so when the enemies of Israel decided they didn't like him crowding them, they said, "Let's go hire the man of words and have him speak words that will curse these people and change the course of this, because we need all the help we can get. So let's try that too." So they call him and say, "We will pay you handsomely if you will come and curse these people." And he says he realizes from God that these are a blessed people and that he should not curse them. And so he takes a strong stand and he says this: "Even if you give me all the silver in your palace, I will not come. And I will not curse these people. But let me go pray about it again tonight, just and see what God says. That's exactly what he did. Let me go tonight. That's what he said, this big, oh, man of God. But I'll tell you what, let me go pray about it again tonight. And while he's asleep, he has a dream. And that night, and in it, God says, okay, if you want to go, go. And so he goes. Now here's where it gets confusing. He goes, and then, I mean, God says, if you want to go, go. Then he goes, and God gets mad because he went. This is a hard story to figure out. And I was trying to figure out, what is going on here? How can you figure this thing out? So I thought, if we could just talk about this just a minute, you'd understand exactly what's going on in this story. Especially you that have kids here, especially some of these older kids, you'll understand. You know, like the kid says, I want to go. And you say, well, I really don't want you to go. I don't think it's a good idea. And really what you want is you want their head and their heart to match your head and your heart. That's what you want. It's not the, it, okay, they say, but it's not that bad. Well, I know it's not that bad, but it's not that good either. And so they're weighing all the outward and all the dangers and all the crowd and who's going to be there and what time I'll be home. And you're going, and you know that it's probably not going to be a disaster. They'll probably survive and they'll come home to you again. But it's just in your heart and in your head, you're going, oh, man, what I want from you is a match between us. And they nag it, and this, it won't be that bad. Everybody going, and finally you go, what? All right, okay. If you want it, go. And what's your heart saying? Oh, I hope they change. I hope they say, I've decided I'm not going. Okay, you're right, I'm going to go with you. And so you said go, but in your heart, you wanted to be your heart. So then when they went out the door and went, you got mad because I wanted them to see what I see. I wanted to feel what I feel. They went knowing nothing what I have inside of me. And I think that's what happened. See, Balaam was a man for sale. He's for hire. He's up for grabs. Just like so many people, it's not only pastors, but it's people, it's these kids. The devil would like nothing more than you for you to have it not settled yet that you're up for grabs. That you can still be swayed. And so Balaam was a man for sale. His words were for sale. And God says, no, don't go. And then he goes and he prays again. And he starts trying to bend God to the middle. And God says, all right, go. And when he goes, God's going, oh, man. It's not the fact that he went. It's the fact that he doesn't understand. So then the famous story of he's riding along on this whatever. And I guess it depends on the country you're in. But it's kind of a Mr. Ed story is what it is. Us older who know Mr. Ed, it's kind of that, you know. Talking, maybe singing, I don't know, humming, horse. Only in his case it was a donkey. And he comes and this donkey starts, every time he gets in the middle of the road, he stops and finally it gets to the point where this donkey lays down. And he's beating this thing to the point where the donkey speaks to him. And the reason the donkey does it is smarter than Balaam is, because the reason he does it is because this animal sees the angel of the Lord standing in the way that Balaam doesn't see. And eventually he figures it out. And I thought about that. Here God said go, then he goes. And then once he goes, God gets mad. And then once God's mad about it, then he sends the angel of the Lord. And I had to figure all this out. And here's the reason why. It's because Balaam knew what he was supposed to say. But he was being tempted to go and curse him anyway for the money. The money. He was going for the money. That's why on the way, the angel of the Lord came. And when that angel of the Lord came, it confirmed to him, I better not mess around here. In my generation, when I was young, animals didn't talk. Lassie just barked. Remember that? Anybody old enough to remember the dog Ren 1010? He just ran up and growled and bit people like a real dog. The other day, I was in some city, and I was trying to catch the weather, all a lot of weather and hurricanes and stuff like that. And so I'm flipping through the channels, my favorite channel, the Weather Channel. And so I was flipping through that, and I went by the Disney Channel. And I hadn't seen this thing, but I kind of knew about it. And they had these three animals trying to get home. I couldn't remember the name of it, or I'd tell you. You guys know the name of it. Three animals trying to get home. There's a black and white dog. Then there's another dog that looks like Old Yeller. Then there's a real fluffy old Siamese-looking cat. We have come a long way from my day. All three of them could talk without moving their lips. In my day, you read about Balaam's donkey. You went, whoa, that's a miracle. But our kids today said, that's nothing. We got dogs that talk without moving their lips. The whole generation ready for miraculous things, unusual things. I think that the problem was, in all of this, is the heart of Balaam. Balaam was for sale, and he was always at risk to go one way or the other. God said, bless him. But there was always that pull on him because he's used to receiving. He says, come and curse them and I'll reward you handsomely. And so he's working his way, he's trying to figure out and why he went in the first place, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And so he has to have a major event because God did not want him to curse them. And the story is more complicated than that. But I think we can understand that here Balaam was getting ready. Listen, this hurts me. Balaam was getting ready to make a sale. If there was ever an hour, men and women of God, to not do that, this is the hour. It's so costly. We put our sermons together, but back in our heads, we're really getting ready to make a sale. We're going to sell ourselves. We're going to sell our church. We're going to let everybody know we have a great program. We don't. In some places, we don't need revival. They're making a sale. They're selling their program. We've got our program. We've got our daycare. We got our children. We got everything that ever we, you know, we got, even got our own T-shirts. You know, what do you need revival for? When you get, you know, and maybe I don't know whether my kids and my friends and my church, who haven't been in that position, really can comprehend the depth of what I just said. But I know that my friends here in the ministry know exactly what I'm talking about. You're not making a sermon that reaches the heights and pulls down the God Almighty's mind and heart into the hearts of a building with full of people who need to hear from God. You're making a sale. Your own ministry, your own self, your denomination, your building. Maybe it's your build. Maybe you're just gonna make a sale on your building program. But it comes out like here's the man of God that's been with God, but not so. And surely it must break God's heart when He sees so many Balaams around now that. Have turned out to be people for sale. They speak according to the pay. That's got to break his heart. For the man who was betrayed for coins. He was betrayed for money. I know in Judas it was much more complicated than just money. There was heart problems in him. You know, he had a bad heart for God, didn't he? Because he'd been stealing from the purse anyway for a long time. So, I mean, we got to understand there's pretty deep problems here. To be around miracles and signs and wonders and turn is a pretty deep thing. But nevertheless, when it gets down to it, he's betrayed for some coins. Betrayed for some coins. And we look at ourselves and we say, oh, I would never be a Judas. I haven't ever done that. I would never be that bad. And yet all over America right now at this very minute, the true Jesus, the real heart, the tears of Jesus, the joy of Jesus is all being betrayed for coins. Men and women who are for sale. And it's not just pastors. You know, last night I looked at those tags, Kathy. I saw worship leaders here. Worship leaders who know God wants to break through all the stuff and have a true move of God that comes through you and out through your mouth and through your eyes and through your hands as you lift the glory upon the people, the glory of God. And yet, right when you know you should take a stand and be the man or be the woman God's called you to be, you hear those coins rattling and you back. That's the problem with Balaam. He was for sale. And Balaam is treated badly, or spoken of badly, all through the Bible. All through the Bible, he's spoken of badly. And now we know why. That's what breaks my heart, Kathy. Is here is these guys. We think, you know, we think we want, you think you want revival because of what? Read this. Get this. Verse 11. When the crowd saw what Paul had done, they shouted and said, the gods have come down in human form. That's why we want revival. They're going to say, oh, look, the gods have come. My pastor is a god. He's come down in human. He's got the power. And we start getting these imaginary pictures of us and the power and God's moving. And oh, it's so wonderful. And people are going to think I'm powerful. And they might even put me on TV, you know, and I'll get to do all those things. And I thought, it's not like that, is it? Because the same people cannot be trusted. The same ones that are calling you gods are the same ones. They sent some people in. Here they're calling them gods. Then all it took was a few people to come down and sway the crowd over. And they stoned Paul, dragged him outside the city, thinking he was dead. What a day! Talk about the mountain peak to the valley. You see, what they're saying and what they're paying can't be trusted. They'll go with whatever. And while revival's on the bandwagon, if you just get on the wagon just to join the band, it's going to turn on you later, because those people right now, they're saying revival and we're in the river and we're going and we're flowing. Yeah, because it's kind of popular, and you open up all the Christian magazines, revival's everywhere, and it's kind of the buzzword. I think I got a message the other day from somebody that says revival's the buzzword now of America. And so right now it's kind of the thing, you know. And I suppose there's some people that came here, Dan, just because it was the thing and revival's the thing. But we hope they got more than that thing, you know. But I'm telling you, right now they're saying, yeah, this is great. But you can't trust those people that play the bandwagon Christianity that are for sale, because later on they may be stoning us. They might just change their mind. All it would take was somebody else that speaks better than we and more persuasive than we are to change their mind and make them think we're all devils. Pretty soon all these people who said revival, revival, revival are turning on us. You can't do it for the bandwagon. You can't do it to be popular. You can't do it for the money. You can't do it for church growth. You got to do whatever you do to restore the honor to God and do what's right, come what may, revival or riot. But we're not going to play this game of religious routine. We're going to do what's right. We're not doing what's right because it's a bandwagon of popularity now. And so now I can go and join the revival crowd. We're not doing it for that. We're doing it because God deserves better than this. And so we're going to go do what He deserves. And if it causes revival, hits the land, great, I want revival in the land. But I told our church, I said, I cannot guarantee that this is going to work. I can guarantee you what God wants to do. I can guarantee you He wants to change hearts. I can guarantee you He wants to heal bodies, change hearts, deliver us from our sins, help us with our hurts, lift our oppression. I can guarantee He wants to revive His church and bring back to life a dead group of people that are wandering through the wilderness. He wants to take us to the promised land in this lifetime. I can guarantee that, but I cannot guarantee it will happen, and I cannot guarantee that we'll be popular as we go there, because I don't know what everybody's going to do. I've told them, I said, I can pretty well tell you what's going to happen if we succeed. Revival's going to break out and fire's going to come, and you're going to hear signs and wonders and miracles and people that you cannot, I'm telling you, people that just looks hopeless that they would ever come to Jesus will suddenly spring forth, and you'll wonder what was the big deal. They weren't so tough after all. Because there's going to be an increase of the miraculous and the power and the glory and the conviction. All that stuff is on the way. I can tell you if we succeed, what's going to happen. But I can also tell you that it's not guaranteed that we're going to succeed. Because if it was guaranteed that we were going to succeed, there would be no risk and it would take no faith. We might end up being called gods. Or we might end up being stoned. Or both. I don't know. I only know it's right. That's all I know. The consequences. How would you say that? Kathy, help me. The consequences are inconsequential. Help me say it. Rachel. It is hard to talk up here. The consequences, say it again, the consequences are inconsequential. You ought to publish that and they'll think, that is a pretty academic people there. Look how they talk. Big, big words. I guess I'm done. I'm just trying to, I probably preached longer than I was going to anyway. I'm just telling you, there's a for sale sign that looms in the air of our churches. And nobody talks about it. Everybody pretends it's there. We in the ministry really pretend it's not there. But Jesus didn't pretend it's there. He said, go this way, I am the way. Everybody else is a hireling. You know what a hireling is? That's somebody you hire for money. Don't you understand, folks? There are people all over America that'll be hired to say whatever. But it doesn't have to be pastors. I mean, like our own teenagers here, I just want to get something out of your life, and that is, I want to get out of your life that there is no price. You can't be bought. There's no price. There's no negotiating. You know, you don't lay awake at night thinking, well, you know, I won't be liked. I won't be popular. I won't be in. I will be different. You know, Paul never laid awake night saying, what if nobody likes me? He did what's right. And if they liked him, which some people will, obviously, they may call you gods. And they may stone you. But you do what's right. See, we've got to quit being people that are for sale. We have to put up a sign that says non-negotiable. Non-negotiable. There's certain things that cannot be negotiated in my life. I cannot negotiate my commitment to him. There's certain things I will never change on, and there's certain things we might as well not talk about. I belong to him. I'm his, and I am not for sale. And I think for everybody, all the pastors, leaders, but the people too, we've got to just see ourselves today. Because it doesn't have to be pastors. You know, all of us know how to play this game pretty well. And all I'm saying is, this house, it's supposed to be a house, right? This spiritual house that I am. We are a spiritual house being built up. All I'm saying today is this house needs to take the for sale sign out of the yard. Just take the for sale sign out of the yard. I am not Balaam, and I'm not a hireling. I am not for sale at any price. I am called to speak the word of God boldly. And when we take the for sale sign out of the yard and we speak the word of God boldly, I think we'll get the same results, and we will see God will come and confirm the boldness of his word being spoken with miracles, signs, and wonders, confirming his word all over the earth. That's all I'm going to say. Thank you. Let's stand up and stretch just a minute. What is my poor son-in-law going to do? You're late. Poor guy has to go to work in between. He told me he had to slip out at 12, but he was on the platform. He got caught. Now, Dave, they didn't fire you yesterday, did they? Okay, well, they're not going to fire him. And if they do, you just call. We'll all be right in. But yeah, he works at, it's not his life's calling because he's finding this ministry, but he took it so they could move here. My daughter works at Division of Family Services now, took that job so she could be in revival, and he took a job at Heilig Myers on the highway, going that way on 50. So if you want to, yeah, they have a sale this weekend, Labor Day sale. If you want to go and order it from him and have it delivered from your local Heilig Myers, could do that. But nevertheless, as you go out of town, if you see that little place this afternoon, stop in and say hi to him. He'll be in there. And
Everybody go in and buy a lamp.
Oh, yeah, we better do that. My guys are having a fit up here. Do you think there's a conflict or something? Oh, they're saying, after what you just preached. Oh, I see. You should take an offering before a sermon like that. Yeah. But you know what? Everybody can, you just step foot in this place and you can tell that we're not for sale. You can tell. That's the whole thing we're about. I have been written about in a number of magazines, and it was too bad in one particular magazine. They wanted to print how much money I made, and I talked, they talked them out of it. So what they did was, because that's not what they were doing. They were going to compare my salary to other revival ministers in the United States in a magazine to embarrass, not me. They were using me as the what? Look at him. You know, he has not had a raise since this revival started. And your incomes have soared and all that. And we pleaded with them, please don't do that to us. Don't do that to us. Because what happens here has nothing to do with what happens someplace else. So all they did was say he hadn't had a raise and since the revival started, and he still lives in a modest home. And then they put in parentheses, see our article on. So, yeah, I don't want to get into that at all, you know. Whatever you do here is to help this cause, and we're just a small group of people that are trying to touch the world, and you just know that this is a place that's really, really different. Elder Dave's going to come and speak to us a minute, and what we're going to do is do this, and then, is everybody doing okay? You know, because it's sort of a holiday anyway, and I wouldn't want to rush God now at this point. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give it to our elder Dave, and then we're going to start doing some music. We're not going to stretch this out. If you have to go get a drink or something other than that, certainly when the music begins, it's not an offering break, but I mean, you can move around a little bit. But if it were me, I'd just sit tight, and actually it'll go faster, because what we want to do is we're going to worship God, and we've got how many testimonies now? And I want to say, during this time, though, if you feel that you should not get out of here at least without offering your testimony, something's happened, something's changed, something about you, somebody should hear, there'll be some people right up here by the platform, and they would probably be interested. They've got three testimonies that they're going to share during worship. We're going to worship the Lord, and then as the moment's right, we're going to grab them and have them share, and we're going to worship some more. We're just going to close this out now in worship and some testimonies to His greatness. But if there's a testimony that, you know, maybe you should give, they'll listen to it and see if it'll fit, you know, what's going on. But maybe you should decide, should you offer it, okay? Then the last thing I want to say, and this is probably the last word you'll hear from me. There's no guarantee that, I guess, but that's the way it's going to try to be, is if you really want to help this move of God here, certainly, Dave's going to talk to you about the offering, and we do need to get some land, and we're talking about building just for, because it's just so hard to work in this place, and it's hot like that. But that's not really our number one need. Our number one need is not money. Our number one need is, if you go back, is that you tell your friends and other pastors that this is real, and God's really in the place. I'm begging you, if it's a question of money, don't just put it out of your head. Just take your money and do something else with it. But I won't beg for your money, but I will beg you, please, 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 go tell some other pastor that it's safe and it's real and it's not near as wild as you thought it would be. Although it was kind of wild last night, wasn't it? Yeah. Okay, don't tell them about that part. But go inside the Smith and Outpouring. Start with that one. And then all of these teachings have been taped. And I guess you have to order those. I'm going to have to get a set myself. But please, go back. Two things you can do. Go tell some pastor that it's safe and it's real, and we're hungry to meet them. And just like we want you to come and help us change the picture of American religion. And then number two, if you're a pastor or a leader or an influential person in your church, then get your people here. Just, that's all we ask. Just tell a pastor and then send some folks down that maybe were reluctant or they need to take a trip someplace, and send them to us and give us a chance to pour our lives into them. That's all we ask. It's not, you know, the money helps, but that's not what we're after. We're after your hearts, and we're after more pastors, and we're after those pastors who have people that need to be here. Send your people and let us just influence them, and then you can have them, and hopefully we can be a good influence on everybody. So please, I'm begging you, go tell somebody what happened to you and what you saw and heard here in this place. This is our Elder Dave that I spoke highly about, who's been such a big help, a revival in the place. And come on up, Dave, and I don't know if you want to stand or sit, but I'm going to get off to the side now, and we'll